Yeah. Hello. Hello.
Hi, Sean. It's Lisa here. How are you?
Good, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing great. Did you get my email?
I did, but I tried Skyping you, but it didn't go through.
Okay. I've been waiting for you to get back to me. See, the email address that you've used, the gnome book writing one, it's not available on Google. So I provided you an alternate email address if you want to do it on Google Meet. If not, then I've sent you the Zoom link for my meeting room. Which way do you wish to go?
I tried dialing into you, but it didn't work. So
do you have Zoom?
Google Meet. I do. I have Zoom on my phone, but it's not ideal. I mean, does this work here? Can we talk here now?
Okay. All right. Then let's continue over the phone because I can have this call recorded. Okay. So I have your permission to record this?
Yes, please do.
Perfect. Let me just put that on. All right, Sean, I am ready. Just opening up your brief form, and we can begin.
Okay.
Okay, all right. So let's start off with the book idea. You have written in the brief form that this book will be talking about how opportunity meets business aviation experiences on four continents, I believe. Is that continents? Four continents?
Yeah.
And how aviation unites people from all walks of life. Can you please elaborate that further?
Yeah. So my background, Lisa's taken me to several different countries and places around the earth where I've met similar people, may have different culture, may have different backgrounds, but I've always found business aviation and aviation as a whole is a way to unite people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a place that I've found very, it's always been a uniter. And whether you're South African, whether you're Indian, whether you're Russian, whether you're North American, Irish, English, everyone has a common purpose in time, and time is a very valuable resource. And I've found that people that have the wherewithal to own a business aviation airplane has benefited from getting more time with their family, getting more time with their businesses. And I've just found that being able to sell airplanes across multiple different continents has enabled me to see things and experience people from different cultures with the similar interests, if that makes sense.
Yes, that does make sense. It must be a very, a fun learning experience for you, meeting people from different cultures, yet relating on one mutual or common goal or topic, right?
Yeah, and it's been very, for the most part, I found it very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been one of the most gratifying things about my job is I've been able to obviously meet some very fascinating people, whether it's politicians,
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurs, or business owners. They all have a similar goal. They want to improve the way they live their lives, and business aviation has been one of those tools. And while business aviation can be thought of as a rich man's toy, it's really been a phenomenal tool or instrument for people to, live their lives in a manner that is more fulfilling and gratifying and, more efficient. And
mm-hmm.
whether I sold airplanes, and in all the places I've sold airplanes, I've also lived in these
mm-hmm.
places, and I've been able to experience firsthand how while business aviation you could argue is a luxury, it's also been a very important tool for some of these entrepreneurs like Richard Branson, who I've flown with, or you know Sergio Garcia, the golfer who flies around the globe to play golf. It's been an instrument for them to lead more fulfilling lives and be more comfortable. Ultimately, we all try to buy things to enrich our experiences, and mm-hmm. business aviation has exactly done that for a lot of people on different continents.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Now let's move on to the next question, which will be a more detailed one for us because we'll have to spend like
yep.
a couple of sessions on your shared experiences. All right. Now,
yep.
question
yep.
was, why do you want to write this book? So you answered you want to share your experiences that unite people across the planet. Now, since we're talking from your perspective, I would like for you to give me a brief breakdown of your early years and how you got into this field. What was your first decade like, you know, the first 10 years working in this field, and then we will, you know, expand things from there.
Okay. And Lisa, I apologize. I did my very best getting you that outline, but I know it
don't be worried.
Years.
That's completely fine. This is just the base.
Okay.
And I knew it from the beginning that you and I, we will have to talk over the phone. So it's completely fine.
Great.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you. So my aspirations to become a pilot began when I lived in Ireland. I was born in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 4, my mother and father moved back to Ireland, where my father wanted to live back in his homeland with my mother because the two of them originally met in the U.S. They both came across to America during the Kennedy era, and they obviously wanted to become U.S. citizens because there was a better life in America at that time. But my dad always had aspirations to bring the family back to Ireland. So I am one of 7 siblings, and we all moved back to Ireland, Dublin, Ireland. And the home that we lived in, a place called Portmarnock, Ireland, in Dublin,
okay.
was right underneath the flight path of Dublin Airport. So as an early age, like 5 and 6, I was always mesmerized and looking skyward at the plane flying over our house in the Dublin Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we would go back to America for summer vacations to visit family back in America, I would always be gravitated to the cockpit of an airplane. And at that time, you know, you were invited up to the cockpit and you could sit on the pilot's lap during
mm-hmm.
the transatlantic flight, and it was
yeah.
very very exciting time for me. So
mm-hmm.
From an early age, I always wanted to become a pilot, and it wasn't until my later years when I was back in America, because at the age of 12, my mother felt there was more opportunities back in America than in Ireland during the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
So she moved us all back to America, and fortunately for me, I was able to go and look at aviation as a career, because in Ireland it would have been much more challenging. But long story short, I thought I would become a naval aviator after watching Top Gun. That was a movie that inspired me to really become a pilot, as much as I always would have liked to have become a pilot. It was my senior year in high school when I watched Top Gun, which was like, now I want to become a pilot. And it was a recruiter or my advisor counselor in high school that said, well, you got to go talk to the Navy and you need a signature from 2 senators. And that was very complicated. And my advisor, as good as she was, really didn't know how to become a pilot. But
mm-hmm.
I found out that there was a couple of aviation schools. Unfortunately, there was one in New Hampshire where I had an aviation scholarship or a soccer scholarship. Sorry, I played soccer in high school, so I was allowed to use my soccer ability to offset some of my flight training costs. So my first decade of aviation was really as a student. I was learning how to fly. I went to college to become a pilot. I got my degree in aeronautical science.
Mm-hmm.
It evolved from starting in New Hampshire to going down to Florida. And
how old were you when you got the degree?
So I was, let me see, I was 22. Yeah, 22. At 22, I got my degree in aeronautical science from a university called Florida Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my pilot's degree from a flight training school called Flight Safety, which is very famous, very, very well renowned. And then from there, I was given an airplane and a laptop computer, and I was told to go sell flight trainers. Because at the time I was a flight instructor, and all I wanted to become was an airline pilot. But I found out about this job selling airplanes by mistake. It was kind of, I got lucky, and I was a company called Diamond Aircraft based out of London, Ontario, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked for the best flight instructors around the country, and I was one of eight. And from there, I never looked back. I never went back to trying to fly for an airline. I was fortunate over the next 30 years after my first job out of college where I became a professional, seasoned sales professional selling multiple types of airplanes to universities, to entrepreneurs, to businessmen, to airlines and the like, flight training schools, to where I am now at Airbus, you know, 20 plus years later.
Okay, so is it something that you do privately, or how does this work, selling airplanes?
So I've always, worked for major original equipment manufacturers, which are referred to as OEMs. So my first job was with Diamond Aircraft, and that was an aircraft built up in London, Ontario, Canada. They're in the flight training space. They were kind of a revolutionary new way of flight training for students across the country and, for that matter, around the world. And then from there, I went to work for a company called Raytheon Aircraft Company, and then they were bought out by Goldman Sachs and Onyx, and they became Hawker Beechcraft. So I spent probably 5 years, or 4 years at Diamond and 15 years at Hawker Beechcraft before going off and working for other businesses. But ultimately, I've come back to work for Airbus, which is, you know, one of the largest OEMs in the world, $80 billion business. And I now run the aircraft corporate jet side of that business. So I'm now selling probably the biggest, most expensive business aviation aircraft around the world.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll take that. That is the beginning or the initiation, a good overview of your career briefly. Let me ask you this. Can you give me the exact timeline in terms of, well, you were born in U.S., right? Or were you born in Ireland?
No, I was born in the U.S., 1972, October 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And then four years later, I moved to Ireland, so I would have been in 76.
Okay. Tell me more about your parents. What did they do? Anything that you can give us, you know, just the basic background. Not a lot.
Yeah. No, that's fine. My mother has always been a very strong woman, matriarch of the family, and unfortunately she has Alzheimer's today. But it's fine. I mean, she's a great lady and very blessed that she's still with us. And
I'm sure
she always took care of us. And that the amazing thing about my dad is my dad or my mother, neither one of them have ever been high school educated. They were never went to college. My dad always worked blue collar jobs, whether it was a milkman in Ireland to running an off license in Ireland, which is a liquor store, to where he ran a Pepperidge Farm route in North America up in New Jersey. And Pepperidge Farm is kind of like the most premier cookie that
right.
you can buy. And I've always appreciated that brand and what it represented, because that cookie sent myself and my other six siblings to college. And my dad was never, you know, college educated, but worked extremely hard, and he would show up to my soccer games in his Pepperidge Farm truck, and all the other kids, you know, parents would show up in their, you know, Mercedes and BMWs. My dad would always make my soccer games, because I was very competitive in high school. I actually played with many of the U.S. soccer team players that made the World Cup, you know, a few years back. Not now, that's for sure. I'm a little too old. But my dad always showed up at our games in his truck, and he always made time for myself and my other siblings when it counted. And it may not have been in a BMW or a Mercedes, but he was just there. So that kind of gives a little overview. And my mother was, you know, the matriarch of the family, and she made sure we all knew the importance of education and how important it was to be educated and go to college. All of my seven siblings but one went to college, and that was one of my mother's main mantras. And if it wasn't for my mother moving us back from Ireland to the U.S., I probably wouldn't have been a pilot today, or wouldn't have been near as successful as I would have liked to have been. So that's kind of a little overview of my mother and father.
Okay, all right. And what about your siblings?
So my siblings are very diverse. They
okay.
live both here in the U.S. and both and in Ireland. I'm the youngest of seven. I'm the youngest boy of seven siblings. My sister Kathleen is kind of what we call an Irish twin. She's 11 months younger than me.
She's
always 1 month of the year. We're always the same age. But I have a brother Kevin in Ireland. My brother Brian in Ireland, who he worked for Amazon. He worked for Intel. I have a brother Michael in New Jersey. We owned a bunch of bars together, Irish bars. That was probably the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life, but we owned three bars. The only good thing that came out of that experience was I met my wife there during St. Patrick's Day, but that was a great learning experience. And then my sister Patricia and my sister Kathleen and my sister Mary live in New Jersey, and they all are mothers and work for big companies. And my sister Mary's a special needs person for speech therapists and children of need. So, yeah, very diverse family, very close, always see each other for the holidays, birthdays, and very, very close sibling group.
Okay, all right. Well, you have a nice, big, happy family. I'm sure the childhood that you spent must have been a really interesting one with a lot of siblings, right?
Yeah, it was. It was two sets. So, like, I'm the younger of the second set. I do have a younger sister, but then we had an older, the four older ones. They were kind of like the bigger brothers and sisters. But yeah, very close family, lots of experiences and great memories, both here and in Ireland. And we've all celebrated our 40th and my most recent 50th birthdays, and they made sure to surprise me and be at my birthdays just as much as I've tried to be at theirs.
That is sweet. Okay. All right, so I'm going to move on. Now, there are two things that we would discuss towards the end of the session. I just want to make sure that I'm covering all the notes and the questions before I move on to the big chunk, you know. So let me just, on the record, let me just mention the two things that we will discuss. See, the initial chapter will be mostly, more or less like an introductory chapter, more about your family, your background, and your childhood specifically, the time that you spent with your parents, your siblings. So we will have a few, you know, heartwarming experiences in the first chapter, in the first two chapters, you can say. So it's possible that we may have an introductory chapter and then chapter one, which will solely focus on your childhood. I think that is the preferred option, but that all depends on the team, of course, you know, how they think and how creative they want to be. It's possible that they might have a different layout or a different suggestion, but more or less, this is the playground that we have, okay, for the initial two chapters. And the second part that I want to go over are your experiences specifically that you would like to share in the book. Not in general, but we will have to specify certain experiences or certain scenarios or situations that you faced in your life. That would be individual chapters later on, you know, that people can relate to in terms of aviation and your experience over there. So we are going to talk about that as soon as we cover the complete brief form. Now, the next question was, who's the audience for your book? Why would readers be interested in your book? Aviation enthusiasts, okay, business school majors. All right, that is completely fine. We do not need to discuss that. Who do you plan on selling your book to? That is fine, too. Is there a particular writing style? Okay, bio, but will some artist style? Okay. Are there any books similar? No. Is there anything else you would like to discuss? Business aviation is an amazing tool for good. Sometimes it gets a bad reputation. Would like to change that. Okay, yeah, you need to elaborate that.
Yeah, so Lisa, most people that I've sold airplanes to have very genuine goodness and genuine beliefs in expanding the benefit of either their own families or others. And whether I've sold airplanes in South Africa or India or Asia, I've always found the people I've been introduced to have one common goal. They want to give back. They have a philanthropy piece to them. And while business aviation today in some parts of the world looks like a rich man's tool or an excess, most of the time there's a multiplier or there's a ripple effect that people don't necessarily always see. And for the most part, I've never met someone, and I feel blessed because of this, I've never sold an airplane to someone that I felt like, wow, that's a jerk or a guy that's just taking advantage of, you know, his own, you know, exuberance and wealth to benefit him. There's always been an underlying goodness to people that have bought an airplane. They either have a business that supports thousands of jobs and or they have a philanthropy cause that they give their airplane on the side for, or in general, they're just good people that, you know, worked really hard all their lives and now they have the opportunity to enjoy it. Whether you own an airplane or a boat or a brand new car, you've worked hard to get to that place in life. And unfortunately, there's been too many times that I've seen that people look at business aviation as an excess or it's not environmentally friendly, it's not necessary. But when you really look at it, whether it was selling to a politician in India, the airplane was used as a mechanism to expand someone's goodness or someone's way of doing things in a very good way, if that makes sense.
It does. Thank you so much for that. And now we can address the elephant in the room and talk about your early years, childhood, that will develop the introductory chapter for us, or the first chapter. This has everything to do with your childhood, your family, your basic values, what motivated you. You already gave me a little bit of insight in terms of how you got involved in, you know, learning to fly. It actually became your passion when you were a kid, and you lived near the airport. So let's continue from there and cover your early years.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate that in my early years I was exposed to two very different cultures. While I was probably too young to appreciate living in America, and this is in New Jersey, I was very fortunate at a very young age to be moved across the pond to Ireland, where I was able to see, you know, the different cultures in Ireland, and people had worked very hard for a living and had multiple different walks of life, and that was a way for me to kind of see things from an hourglass. That really helped shape me as a kid to be very even keel, or look at things from both perspectives. As a young man growing up and working in a business environment, I always felt like I benefited from living on both sides of the pond. I could understand the way people thought and did things differently. You know, I played Gaelic football in Ireland, which is a very different sport that many people don't know or understand, and I played hurling. And then when I came to the U.S., I obviously played soccer, because I did play soccer in Ireland, but I didn't play American football. And people at that time, I had a little bit of an Irish accent, and they just, instead of calling me Sean, they called me Irish. You know, I'm not saying that I was, it was discriminatory, but it, you know, that was just their way of talking to me. So I was Irish. And I played for a predominantly Jewish team, Jewish American team. And again, my dad had a brogue, and my dad showed up in the Pepperidge Farm truck while all the other kids' parents showed up in the Mercedes and the BMWs. And not to say I was kind of a, I stuck out a little bit. I did. And I was obviously allowed to play on this select soccer team, which they call the travel team, because of the talent that I had. But at the same time, I was different. And I used that experience to kind of strengthen my belief. And even though I might be a little different, I might have similar or different qualities, I had different ways of doing things. So that experience was a big part of me coming back to America, that kind of helped me look at things a little differently.
Let me ask you this. You had so much of interest in playing soccer or football as well. Why didn't you think of pursuing that as your official career? Why business aviation?
I wasn't good enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. I mentioned earlier, I did play at a very high level in soccer, and I was injured a lot. School, I had shin splints.
So that thought never crossed your mind?
Play professional football? No.
Yeah.
I don't think, well, in America, soccer at the time.
Sean, you there?
Can you hear me? I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I just lost you. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying at the time, soccer wasn't very well received at the time. And, you know, interestingly enough, I had the opportunity to play for Rutgers Select. Rutgers was a big university in New Jersey, and Rutgers Select was a group of individuals that were asked to play at a tournament. And during that tournament, I played with a number of the U.S. Soccer players that made the World Cup, like Claudia Urania, Alexi mm-hmm. Lalas. But at the time, I didn't know there was such a thing as a U.S. soccer team, because I just played because I loved the sport, and I didn't think that America was good enough to be in the World Cup, for what it's worth. But aviation became my passion, and Top Gun was a big part of that, because Top Gun came out that year. And interestingly enough, Top Gun was the biggest catalyst to business aviation and to pilots, for that matter, at any given time in history, because it became the go-to movie for people wanting to start a career as a pilot back in the 80s. Early 90s, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that explains it all. Is there anything else about your childhood that you would like to include in the book? Anything at all?
You know, I tried telling Elise over the phone that I have to live on both sides of the continent, and how that really enabled me to become a better person culturally. I also felt living in Ireland at the time during the Reagan era, it was very fascinating, because you know, you had such amazing things going on at that time, and I wasn't living in America. But I'm trying to think what else would be of interest to the book from a childhood perspective. I can't think of really much other than, you know, I had a great childhood.
Yeah, any particular incident that might have happened with your parents or with one of your siblings that you feel is memorable and you would like to mention? If not, then that's completely fine. We can always come back to this part.
The only thing I would say is during my childhood, there was a period of time my dad went back to America by himself, and mm-hmm. he went to go back to find a job. And there was a period of time my mother was left alone with us mm-hmm. because the older siblings had already gone back to America to go to high school and find future opportunities that didn't exist in Ireland. So that mm-hmm. period of time was difficult because we were split up as a family. And mm-hmm. it was my mother's relentless pursuit in education for all of us that made that happen. And while it was difficult, it was a necessity for the family as a whole to become stronger. And it was my mother's canny ability to tell my dad, hey, we can raise the children in Ireland, but they'll become much better citizens and individuals if we move them back to America. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, we had that option because we were both U.S. and Irish citizens.
Okay. All right. Okay. That completes the early lifehood or the basic introduction to your childhood. Sean, I'm going to drop the call here, and I'm going to call you back in 10 to 15 minutes, where we will talk about your overall experiences, because every experience that you faced in your career, of course, which is relevant, that's what I'm going to ask you, all right? So we're going to list down a couple of experiences, and we will talk a bit about them. Maybe like an overview. That way we'll get a rough layout of the overall book. Okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you like 10 to 15 minutes to brainstorm. Meanwhile, I'm going to take a washroom break, and I'll come back.
Okay, Lisa. Looking forward to it.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.